Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back. This is episode 267 of the MTG Pro Tutor podcast, and I could not be more excited because Rivals of Ixalan is here. The pre-release is this weekend. How cool is that? I hope you're making it out this weekend and learning and enjoying these new cards and just seeing what they're all about. I have the unique opportunity to attend a pre-release in Hawaii because I'm actually in Hawaii doing my annual training with the Navy Reserves. And so I'm going to sneak away this weekend and play some Magic. It's going to be a lot of fun to just go to a new game store and see what they have going on and play some Magic. So if there's any prodigies on the Big Island in Hawaii, then hit me up and let me know where you play. Other than that, wherever you are in the world, I really do hope that you get out and play at a pre-release. And then come on to the Facebook group and tell us what your pool was and what you learned and what you like and what you don't like. And let's just talk about this new set. It's going to be a lot of fun. Speaking of the new set, every single set, we do a sealed league with the prodigies. So in the Facebook group, we'll be posting about that as it comes up. Basically, towards the end of the month, we're going to be organizing a sealed league where you just get to play Rivals of Ixalan with other listeners of the show, and then the winners get real prizes. We give out a bundle of the set that we're playing to the first place winner. I want to say thank you so much for your support of the show, especially to the patrons who are supporting the show over at mtgpro2.com/Patreon. So you can go to check that out. And this year, I've reorganized how the reward structures work and how the support tiers are and the goals and everything. It's pretty cool. So go check that out if you haven't yet. You can find a level that best suits you. Basically, I modeled it after tokens. So we have everything from germ token to plant token to squirrels to zombies, all the way up to angels and dragons. And you can find what best fits you and slide right in there. Now, with this restructuring, I definitely plan to continue the monthly giveaway that we do. Anyone who is part of the bed of plants or higher, so that's $5 a month or higher, will be considered for the monthly drawing. And normally I would be announcing that right about now, but I want to give everyone who is a patron time to go and check your account, because the way that Patreon transitioned people from the per episode system to the per month system was a little wonky. So for example, if you had pledged $1 per episode on the old system, that would be about $8 a month, because I did two episodes a week and that came out to about 8 episodes a month. And so that's how much you would be donating. What Patreon did is transitioned you from $1 an episode to $1 a month, which obviously is much less than $8 a month, and with the way the current structure is, does not qualify you for the giveaway. So I know there are several current patrons who have not logged into Patreon and just updated your account, and so I want to give you that chance to do that before I do the drawing so that you can be considered, so that your name will be in the hat when I do the drawing. So again, if you are a current patron of MTG Pro Tutor, go and check Patreon if you don't mind, because the transition was a bit weird. Basically, whatever you had pledged per episode is now your monthly pledge. And that affects a lot of things, but the two main ones are, first, you may not be in the drawing, which you should be. And second, the support level of the show is actually much less than I anticipated when we transitioned to the monthly system. So I would greatly appreciate it if all current patrons logged in and just updated your support to where you feel you ought to be. And also, if you're not a patron yet, then I definitely encourage you to go and check out mtgpro2.com/Patreon. If you like the show, if you feel like I have earned your support with these great interviews and the tips and tricks that these guests bring to help you become better at Magic and achieve your goals, then check out mtgpro2.com/Patreon, because I really tried to put together some fun things for all the patrons this year. So check that out. And of course, I want to recognize our proud sponsor, Paragon City Games. They provide the prize support for this giveaway that I'm talking about, as well as for the sealed league that we do each and every set. We have our next sealed league coming up here at the end of January. We're going to be doing Rivals of Ixalan. So stay tuned for more information on that. And of course, check out ParagonCityGames.com, where you can get more information about what they have going on and how they build the Magic community. So Paragon City Games, thank you so much. Prodigies, thank you. Patrons, thank you as well. And all you Prodigy listeners, we wouldn't do the show without you. So thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in. Now, since the last episode, we had a great Grand Prix. It was a team event. I love that Wizards is doing more of that, and pretty much every player I talk to loves that Wizards is doing more of that. And it was really neat to see the top four teams be basically people that we've never heard of before. So that's really neat. I'm looking forward to reaching out to each of those players, inviting them on the show, and hearing their stories. So that's going to be a lot of fun as we get around to do that. Now, as promised, we have a great guest lined up today. So without further ado, let's bring him in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest lives in Madison, Wisconsin, and started playing Magic as a freshman in high school, so around 10 years ago. He started playing competitively about 2 years ago and has had a fair amount of Grand Prix Day 2s. He recently made his first top 8 at a Grand Prix at GP Atlanta and will be attending his first Pro Tour in Spain. Prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Sam Sucheski. Sam, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yep. Let's do it.
Excellent. Now, Prodigies out there, you want to connect with Sam. He is not on Twitter, so the best way will be in the Prodigy Facebook group. So if you feel to feel free to join the group at mtgpro2.com/Facebook group. You'll be directed there and you can we'll add you as well. And you can do a post, tag Sam, and that's how you can reach out to him if you want to. Say thanks for being on the show or ask him a question. That's where you can find him. So, Sam, we love to learn about you outside of Magic. Are you working? Are you a student? Is Magic full-time for you? What do you have going on?
So I'm a software tester. I work for an Epic software company in Verona, Wisconsin. So I do that full-time. Outside of work, I'm also play a fair amount of sports leagues, primarily softball in the summer, and then I do a decent amount of basketball in the winter. But Magic is kind of just mainly a hobby for me, and I've had some success with it as well. And I don't know, I enjoy it, and then obviously any success that comes with it is kind of just a cherry on top.
That's great. So softball, basketball, full-time work, that's great. And then this side hobby of Magic, which is now taking you out of the country for the first time. Is that right?
Yep. Wow. Yeah, I get to go to Spain and check all that out. So pretty excited.
Man, that's pretty neat. So have you been a gamer all your life? Did you grow up with siblings playing games or parents? Or where did your general gaming bug come from?
A lot of friends and stuff were kind of involved. So kind of involved with video games, playing card games in general. Like when we were younger, we kind of were involved with like Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, that kind of stuff. Although we never really learned how to play the games. We just kind of had the cards and did our own version of stuff. And then looking back on it, it was kind of comical as to how we played those when we were kids. But kind of involved with that in general. We actually got involved in Magic since my uncle had actually played kind of since it started, and we kind of knew about some of his successes there. He had won states back when that was a pretty big accomplishment a while ago, so we kind of heard about the game there and actually just got involved since we had GameStop credit and didn't really know what to get. Huh. So we bought some Magic packs and stuff from there, and that's kind of how we got started with Magic.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So at a GameStop is where you picked up your first cards?
Yeah.
Nice. So you kind of just told us a little bit about your origin story, which we'd love to dive into more. So your uncle played from its beginning, more or less, actively involved in the competitive scene. So you knew about it. And then with the credit, you got some packs at a GameStop. What was your first set? Do you remember?
So I think the packs that we got were some Time Spiral starter deck. So mine was the one that had like Storm in it with like Pardic Dragon, I believe. In general, and then I don't specifically remember what one my brother had, but it was another one from that same set. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how we started kind of learning the game and playing just with 10 of those. And then we actually started like officially kind of playing where we started going to the shop and stuff in town when Shadow War had came out, since we were at one of my friends invited me to one of those like kind of LAN gaming parties that they were having at the high school, and the local shop just was holding a draft there later that night, like just an F&M draft, but they kind of moved it to the school. And we had heard about drafting in general, but we had never tried it before. So we kind of tried it then. And that's kind of where we got hooked.
Nice. Oh, sweet. Man, that's so fun. I love hearing how people, you know, weave their way into Magic for sure. Did you end up talking to your uncle about it, or did he bequeath you his amazing collection, which had a bunch of really cool stuff in it or something?
After, like, when we'd see him around the holidays and stuff, we kind of talked to him about it some. And then once he kind of knew that we were interested in it, he would, like, bring a deck to, like, the holidays where we could kind of play with them, and gave us some of his just, like, extra cards that were laying around. Yeah. Like, nothing too expensive or anything like that. But then kind of, like, later on, he was kind of settling down, starting a family and everything once we had already been playing for a few years. So then he actually got rid of his collection, but we were able to get some of the stuff from him for kind of like decent prices, or he kind of just gave us some of the stuff there. But he did kind of help teach us some like valuable lessons and stuff on the way. It's kind of how to play in different ways to think about things.
Oh man, that's great. That's really cool. What's been your favorite set?
I like really like when we kind of first started, I really like kind of like the shards block and drafting. That was really fun. Kind of wished I was like a better drafter at the time, in general, because that's kind of when we just started out. So we like learned a lot in the set, but at the same time, I think if you kind of would go back and draft it, you would do things differently. But in general, I thought that one was really fun, and really kind of piqued my interest and got me involved in the game.
Cool. That was Shards of Alara.
Yeah.
And along the same lines, what's one of your favorite cards?
I would have to say, like Liliana of the Veil, in general. Ooh. I really like playing kind of like the Jund mid-range grindy cards. So I play primarily Jund and Modern, and then I've just kind of recently started playing some Legacy as well and play Liliana of the Veil there as well. So yeah, I really like that card and just grinding mid-range cards in general. Thoughtseize would be another one up there because it kind of fits that same purpose. And I just like the fact that it kind of can play it right away on turn one, take their most important card, and then it kind of gives you information to kind of how to play out the game and what you want to do, come up with for your game plan over the course of the game.
Love it. And of the current planeswalkers that see the most activity, Liliana is definitely my favorite. So kudos to you on that one. And for those of us who may not know, what is Liliana of the Veil? What does it do? And why do you like it? Well, you kind of said why you like it. So just tell us, you know, what is it? What does it do?
So it's a 3-mana planeswalker. Comes in at 3 loyalty. And it has 3 abilities. The first is kind of when you plus it, gains 1 loyalty. Each player discards a card from their respective hands. So that ability is kind of good for kind of grinding down opponents in general. It's really good against control and combo kind of decks, since they're kind of wanting to have a critical mass of cards or hold the answers they want to deal with what you're doing. So there's kind of different ways you can build your deck to take advantage of that, whether it's like pitching cards like Lingering Souls in certain formats, depending on which deck you're building, or getting rid of cards that aren't as useful in those matchups, like removal spells against combo and control decks. So it's kind of really hurting your opponent more than you there. Then the next ability is on -2 loyalty. You can target someone to sacrifice a creature. So that's like a good removal spell, and the planeswalker sticks around. And it's also pretty good against like hexproof creatures, things that are more difficult to deal with there. And then the ultimate on it is -6. You kind of separate your target player's permanent into 2 piles. And then they kind of have to pick one, just keep, and then they get rid of the rest of them. That one doesn't happen as often, but there's plenty of games that they can't really deal with your Liliana, and you can kind of usually hit them, take them off some lands, or they might have one problem permanent that you need to deal with, so you kind of give them a tough choice of do they keep that in play or all of their lands, so you can kind of put opponents in difficult situations with that as well.
So my first soiree into competitive Modern was with a Bogles deck. And so she was instrumental in teaching me how inept my hexproof creatures are when I have to sacrifice one and I only have one to deal with. So yeah, very, very good workaround as far as that's concerned. So that's pretty neat. Yeah, love it. Absolutely love it. So as you started getting into Magic more seriously, started playing it more competitively, what was an early challenge that you struggled with and how did you overcome it?
So for me, kind of like one of the big things was kind of like picking out like which kind of decks and stuff that you wanted to play, and then tournament kind of success in general. So I primarily just played draft in EDH, which is kind of, or Commander. Some people call it one or the other, which is more of like a casual kind of format is how I played it with like friends and stuff. And then drafting, I would play competitively. But then when you kind of started, when I started getting involved into more like tournament Magic, it was kind of frustrating at times because I would try to pick a deck and then maybe my deck selection wouldn't be great. So I would lose a lot of matchups kind of almost before they not really be prepared for what I would expect. Like I would just kind of pick a deck that I'd like to play without necessarily putting in like enough research as to what I would expect. So I would kind of unprepared there. So that was kind of frustrating in that regard of like kind of thinking like, oh, I'm in a good shape and I kind of know what I'm doing. And then kind of having that reality of you're playing in tournaments and not really doing too well, which can be kind of frustrating. But at the same time, it was kind of like a learning point where it was like kind of trying to figure out which decks you would face and put more time and effort before the tournament preparing. And then that kind of, you would see a lot more payoffs kind of going forward as well, where you'd feel better prepared. Like obviously, even if you do prepare, sometimes you'll face matchups you weren't expecting and things like that. But just preparation in general, I think kind of helps a lot, and you feel a lot better about tournaments going into them.
So what do you do now to, like you said, research what decks are going to be good and things like that? Where do you go? What are you looking for? Can you flesh out that process for us?
Yeah. So for me, a few of the different things I do, so I don't like actually get to play a ton of Magic during the week. So kind of like my big resources that I do, like before going to tournaments on weekends, whether that's like a PPTQ, FNM, GPs, things like that, are Twitch is like a good one, because you see people kind of streaming like the newest decks, because the online metagame is usually a little bit ahead of the paper one, because people can obviously acquire cards easier online, mm-hmm. kind of do that kind of stuff. So kind of watching Twitch, especially if I can find decks that I would consider myself playing, seeing kind of what they're playing against, interacting with the streamers. Most of them are pretty cool about answering your questions in the chat. So you can kind of ask their opinions on cards, why they made a certain play, things like that. So that's like one thing that's pretty helpful. Another thing too is you don't even have to necessarily watch like a streamer that has a ton of viewers. You can very easily have a nice conversation with someone that only has a few viewers in their stream. They might not be as like popular big name streamer, but it's a lot easier for them to have a conversation with you, kind of talk about the deck versus a ton of people in the chat all trying to say stuff at the same time. They can kind of lose what you're trying to say there. So
that's a really good tip.
Yeah. So that's like one thing that I find helpful. It's just kind of like watching a lot of Twitch, kind of reading articles. Some of the ones that I do that are, fairly like free and anyone can get to them are like the Star City articles, Channel Fireball. I think TCG Player has some. Usually like there'll be pros and people there that kind of we'll talk about decks that I think are good for the metagame and stuff, so you can kind of get a grasp of what people are playing and what some like what people think are good. And then MTG Goldfish and MTG Top 8 have kind of a collection of general decks and some of the bigger tournaments and GPs that have happened recently too, so you can kind of go through there and see what decks have had success recently and kind of check out deck lists and kind of figure out like what cards you would maybe see out of those lists as well, because obviously, each deck, like every Jund deck, for instance, isn't going to have like the same cards in it. But you can kind of get an idea of what kind of cards people are playing in those decks, the different archetypes. So you kind of know what to keep in mind for what you want to play around, what you might see, so you're not completely caught off guard that way. Because then once you kind of can pinpoint what the top decks are going to be and what you think you're going to face, then you can kind of better pick which deck you want to play. Or if you kind of just like playing a certain deck, just tune your deck to kind of be better prepared for what you would expect in your tournament.
Yes, man, that's great. Yeah, a really good process going through. And like I said, I love that tip of, you know, getting on Twitch and, you know, watching a streamer. And even if he's not like he or she is not the biggest, most popular person, you'll be able to have a conversation with them. And they might actually be able to answer and you can have a more back and forth than if you're just watching one of the more well-known ones. That's a really good tip. I think that's great right there. So also thinking back to your early competitive days, I guess, what did you wish you knew then? So what advice can you give to players who are getting into competitive Magic now? You know, they know the basics, but they're just kind of getting into, you know, FNMs and PPTQs, like you were saying. What did you wish you knew then that could help someone in that position today?
I guess kind of the two big things, one is kind of just a tip as far as playing the games go. One big thing that I kind of learned early on, which is kind of some of the advice my uncle gave me, is life is kind of like your life is kind of to be used as a resource. So I would kind of always, when I first started, would just try to always preserve my life total. So I'd be chump blocking creatures I didn't need to, making plays to try to keep my life as high as possible when that's not really necessary. Like you don't lose the game until you're at zero life. So kind of keeping that in mind and kind of leveraging that as a resource throughout the game was one of the kind of big like in-game things that I learned that you don't necessarily think of right away. As far as another tip is to not necessarily dwell as much on the results of the tournament, because like you can definitely be improving as Magic player, but like your tournament results might not necessarily show that. Like you can say go 1-3 or something in a tournament and play like really great Magic, but maybe your draws just didn't line up or your opponent kind of had some of that variance stuff involved there, which for me it was like very easy to get discouraged when I first started playing Magic, of being like, oh, like I went 0-4, 1-3, like this didn't really go well at all. But then kind of taking a step back on that, like you can look at it too as, oh, well, I learned some cool interactions over the course of the tournament, or I did play pretty well, but like this one thing was like one turn here or there could have changed the difference in the game. And kind of just taking all the little things that you learn and trying to look at that instead of like your just record as a whole is kind of one of the big things for me. Because if you just kind of focus on that record, especially when starting out, it can be kind of discouraging if you're not seeing your record improve right away, which is usually going to take some time.
Yeah.
To kind of start consistently putting up those good results, even though you're improving as a Magic player.
Cool. Man, I love that. I love that. You can easily improve as a Magic player and not see it in the results. So don't get hung up on the results. I think that's really good advice for anybody, especially for the newer competitive players. So love it. Absolutely love it. Now, as you have gone through your Magic journey, you've had ups and downs, just like everybody, but your highs and lows have been unique to you. And so we would love to dive into two stories, the first one being your worst Magic moment and what you learned from that experience.
So I guess for my worst one, there's been a few tournaments that I've had where I have like not necessarily thought of like kind of everything, like when I make a play and I think it's kind of the right play at the time. So, I'll kind of make my play. And then if I would have chose the other one, I would have won the match. And because of the choice that I made, I lost. So for me, I kind of like tend to sometimes beat myself up over that, thinking that only if I had made a different decision. So those kind of moments have happened. They happen to everybody, but a few of those have happened. Some of the GPs that I have done where like they were the difference between making day two of the GP or placing well better in day two. So those are kind of like, I guess, cases where they've kind of been a lower point for me where I just kind of like struggle to let them go at times and kind of beat myself up over them, even though, I mean, it's kind of just got to try to move on,
yeah,
keep an even head going forward.
Is there a specific event that comes to mind that we can dive into? Yeah. To give an example?
Yes. So I guess like one of them, I still did pretty well at the event overall, was GP Vegas earlier this year.
Okay.
And day one, there was a situation where I had two plays that I can make. I kind of thought it was the right play at the time. It was a limited event where I, basically, I could have played two different ways. One way, I think, was a little bit more conservative. The other way was a little bit more on the aggressive point, but I figured like I was pretty much in a great shape to win, where if I took the conservative line, I would have given my opponent more time. Mm. And based off what they ended up kind of drawing then, they were able to beat me in two turns versus kind of what I was hoping to happen. So then I was kind of beating myself up over that, because if I made the other play, like there was really no way I was going to lose that game. But the play that I made, I kind of thought I was going to kind of win off of that. So that kind of cost me that game. And then for the next few rounds after that, I was still kind of down on myself, just by the fact that I thought I let one kind of get away there. And then that also a similar situation happened later in the day as well, where it was kind of the same thing. I had like two different plays, and the one that I made, I ended up losing based off what my opponent had. So there was a couple things kind of that I learned from that in general. Is one, it was a limited format that I hadn't actually spent a ton of time really learning. It was kind of, I just signed up for that GP since it was one of the three that were in Vegas.
Right.
So I was like, well, I'm there, I might as well play in it kind of thing. So one of them, I kind of got burned by a combat trick I didn't know existed in the format.
Oh, I've been there.
So I was kind of like, that one was kind of a low point, because I was like, oh, if I would have realized that this was a thing, like I could have easily avoided losing to it.
Yeah.
So I think those kind of situations will come up where, like especially in like the higher level tournaments that you're playing in, where you can kind of make a decision that doesn't really pan out for you, and then kind of be hard on yourself about it. But at the same time, then you kind of got to look past it and use it as a learning experience as well.
Man, yeah, those are good lessons learned. And I'm grateful that you shared them. Like I said, I've been there where it's like, if I only had researched the set a little bit more, then I would have gotten blown out by this comet trick that's obvious because based on his magic or based on his mana or whatever. So yeah, I've been there. And so on the mental side of things, how do you do? Do you do anything now, or what do you do to get? All right, so you mentioned the top eight announcement. Were you not sure that you were locked in for top eight?
Yeah. So the way that it kind of worked out was in fourth place going to the last round, and I was playing the person in third. So they wanted to draw because if they drew, they were 100% guaranteed to be in. I was in kind of this odd spot of if I drew, I was like not guaranteed to be in, but I was pretty sure I would be in.
Oh, man.
And if we played, if I lost, I was obviously just not in.
Oh,
and if I won, I was guaranteed to be in.
Oh my gosh.
So my opponent was like kind of pressuring me to draw because like obviously for him it's beneficial and he was pretty sure I would make it too. So I had looked at the tiebreakers and kind of trying to think about this because we didn't have that long to make the decision.
Yeah.
So kind of putting everything into perspective, I was kind of like, well, if I play this matchup, say we're like equally as good players, we were playing basically the same deck or close to it, like we're both on team or black. So I'm like, let's just throw that as a roughly 50-50 matchup. And as far as, so I'm like, okay, if I play, I got a 50-50 shot to make it. If I draw, depending on the one match that we kind of cared about, if one guy won, I was 100% locked to be in. If the other guy won, I was still pretty sure that I was like 70 or 80% that I would still get in, but it would be a lot closer on the tiebreakers.
Yeah.
So I ended up drawing and then was like, I had a few people were like, wait, you're crazy. What are you doing? And then some people, then once I explained them, like, oh, like that makes sense. Like, we'll kind of see. So I didn't know who won that match that I like needed, like, mattered either, so mm-hmm. I was kind of sweating it out. So I knew I was either eighth or ninth, like those were my two options. So we're just kind of sweating it out in general, and then it ended up being that the guy that like I was guaranteed to be in if he won ended up winning, so I ended up like my breakers were better like by like over 10%.
Okay,
so like it wasn't close when it was all said and done, but I didn't know until they actually made the announcement. So yeah. I was like pretty like kind of almost sick because I'm like, well, I could feel like a complete idiot if I drew myself out of the top eight when I could have played and gave myself a chance.
Yeah.
But it was a pretty cool experience in general because like we were all kind of waiting and one of my friends was actually like filming it. So then when they made the announcement, we were all like kind of going crazy and stuff. And then the guy that I drew with was kind of walking by as well. So he was super supportive and we kind of like gave me a hug and everything. And just in general, it was a pretty like
that's cool.
Exciting experience.
Did he make it in too?
Yeah, the guy that I drew with made it in okay. As well. Yeah, so
nice. Oh, that is pretty fun. What did that mean for you as a Magic player to make top eight of a Grand Prix for the first time?
For me, it was just like just really exciting and cool because it was kind of like a culmination of a lot of the work and stuff that I put in. Finally, having like kind of like a really cool result and kind of thing to look at because I've been trying to make the Pro Tour in general. Since they kind of had announced like the whole PPTQ thing a few years ago. So like that was like really cool in general. And then like having like a good result in general to finally get there since I'd come close a lot and finally having that breakthrough, I was like really exciting, especially kind of doing with like a lot of my, some of my friends there that I kind of traveled with GPs a lot with and stuff. So we were kind of all able to share that experience together.
Cool. Ah, very cool. And how many pro points do you have this season?
So after this past, weekend in Atlanta, in OKC, I now have six. So I was kind of bummed at that one cause I started off 9-1 at OKC this weekend and then I finished 1-4. So I finished 10-5 and only got one pro point where if I would have gotten two and with attending the pro tour, I would have been at bronze. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't have had to play in PPTQs.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of a little bit of a downer, but we can still pick up that point at Indy or if we have a decent run at the Pro Tour. So
yeah, that's very
not
true.
Out of the question yet. I mean, it's going to be tough, but we're going to try.
Very true. So you have six now. You get three just for showing up to the Pro Tour. That's at nine. And so that last point is what you're talking about, either at another GP or at the Pro Tour itself.
Yep.
Yeah. Sweet. And then that'll be bronze, which gets you into all the RPTQs, which is one step closer to, you know, being a regular on the Pro Tour. So love it. That's really fun. And you mentioned a little bit about the card selection with specifically Lightning Strike, which, you know, you said went pretty well for you, which is awesome. How did you go about the deck selection? Like, what made you go with Teemer Black? You talked about your process earlier about kind of evaluating the metagame and stuff like that. But for this specific event, what were you looking at and why did you choose that deck?
So I had played Teemer a little bit in the previous standard. So I had a lot of the cards for it, which is a kind of a little bit of a contributing factor where it was. So I had a lot of the cards. So that was kind of where I started to see if the deck in general was good. So then I wouldn't have to like kind of rebuy or buy different cards.
Yeah.
So I kind of started looking at it. And between kind of like the Pro Tour that had just happened the week prior and everything, it seemed like Energy was kind of the main deck in the format, kind of where you wanted to be. So like Mono Red was like the other big deck. And then you had kind of like the Approach and Control, God of Pharaoh's Gift, so kind of all of those decks that kind of go a little bit over the top in general. So for me, I thought that the Teemer decks had a pretty good matchup against the Mono Red decks. I figured the Mono Red decks would adapt a little bit, which kind of they did at that tournament where they were running Harsh Mentors and the Rampaging Ferocidons to kind of help combat Whirler, which is kind of the big card out of Teemer against them. Mm-hmm. So I've kind of figured like that Teemer versus Red, like Teemer, I think thought would still be kind of favored there. And then I didn't expect there to be a ton of the kind of like Approach control decks at Atlanta as well, just because Energy post board still could pretty fight them pretty well. So I kind of figured there was going to be just a lot of Energy decks in general, because that seemed kind of like the best deck. So then the big thing for me was kind of deciding whether I wanted to play Black in the deck or just straight Teemer. And kind of just from kind of looking online and doing research and talking to some people there, Scarab God was just a very powerful card, and Nissa or Vraska, I mean, was just also kind of had a lot of power and kind of could get you out of tough spots as well. So I kind of thought the black splash was worth it there in that regard, and we kind of helped in the mirror as it kind of gave you a few more cards that were pretty powerful and kind of take over the game on their own if they weren't answered right away. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I settled on the Teemer Black variant, and then some of the kind of, I guess, interesting cards that not all of the this plays. I did play a Nicol Bolas in the main is just kind of a way to go over the top of just Teemer decks and just in general. And then sideboard plan, which I had seen online a couple times and I had tested it in like one of the tournaments that I was able to play in leading up to the GP, was Cartouche of Ambition. Just so you throw that on a Bristling Hydra, it's pretty much just good game against any of the red decks. They can't really kill it. You're just gaining five life turn. So that was kind of
that's good awesome. Way to keep them. Yeah, man, I love that. I love how you broke that down and went through, you know, why you chose it and the lineup for the big matches that you expected. And I mean, that's I feel like that's part of what it takes, you know, putting in that effort and getting that understanding and being very conscious about your decisions and whatnot. And then you go to the event, and I mean, the more you do it, I think the less often you're wrong. But you go, you know, you show up to the event, maybe you're wrong, and you learn a bunch of lessons, like, oh, well, my evaluation is totally off. But other times you show up, and like you said, like, you feel validated, like, oh, man, my metagame call with Lightning Strike, for example, it caught me some flack, but it ended up being really good. And it's fun because if you just copied a deck, you know, you're going to be playing with last week or 2 weeks, you know, 2 weeks ago technology, and you're just going to get run over. So you have to, you know, think, all right, like what new direction can I go or whatever, and you know, make a change based on evaluation and whatnot, and really see where that can take you, like you did, and it paid off. So that's really cool. So super awesome. And, you know, as you played a lot of Magic, obviously, and in different venues and different levels of competitiveness, but what would you say is the biggest mistake that you see players make?
So I guess one of the big things that I guess I think is obviously there's like a ton of technology and like information out there where you can find decks that do well and stuff at tournaments, but I think a lot of people Obviously, kind of copying that deck is like fine. Like, it's out there and it's a lot easier to start from somewhere that is like a proven deck. But I think a lot of people just kind of copy a 75 or copy a deck without necessarily understanding why the choices in that deck were made. It's kind of like how you were saying, is if you just copy a deck, you're kind of playing with old technology in a way. People kind of get their hands on a deck they found online, not necessarily understand why those card choices were made. It might be for a specific metagame at the time that that deck was played, etc. And then they'll kind of play that deck and not necessarily have as much success as they want to have, not necessarily understand how to sideboard with it, what's good in what matchup, things like that. So I think the big thing is just kind of understanding why the cards are there and what they're kind of supposed to do for different matchups and things like that is I think a big thing a lot of people kind of look past, where if they really understand what the deck's supposed to do and why the cards are there, I think it's going to help them pilot it better and just play better with the deck.
Yeah, totally true. Sweet. And now, what have you learned from Magic, Sam, that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
I think kind of one of the big things is like kind of just preparation in general. Whether that's kind of like preparing for a tournament, preparing just for like just your general day-to-day stuff, and kind of like also having kind of like short memory when you kind of do screw up and things. Like, obviously Magic's just a game or a hobby where, I mean, if you screw up there, it's like, yeah, it can be kind of disappointing, but it's not going to have huge impacts on anything. But kind of taking that lesson and applying it to other parts of your life, to kind of, if you make a mistake in just your day-to-day life, moving past that, learning from it, and kind of just taking a lot of those small lessons is kind of pretty helpful in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Mm, love it. That's really good. I love how everyone answers that question, a little differently, and so neat to hear all the neat things that we can learn and do learn from Magic, and how it's just a microcosm of life. So it's pretty nifty. So what would you say is your best format, Sam?
So I don't play a ton of it, but I've had a lot of success in Standard when I do play. I play a lot of Modern, and that's kind of what I primarily play and enjoy to play. But Standard, I think I have my most success in. I think for me, I think it's because most of the time you're just kind of looking at like three or four decks is like the main decks that you're going to see. And I feel like between me and then, like I said, talked to my brother a lot about it, we're really good at kind of figuring out what the metagame is going to be and are really afraid of trying like new things that people might think are kind of odd. So just being able to like really have a focused plan when building a deck or choosing which cards you want to play in an already established deck kind of can really help there. So I feel like that's why I've been able to have a pretty decent amount of success in Standard.
Cool. Now, you mentioned that you do play a lot of Modern, so you're pretty excited that the Pro Tour you're headed off to is Modern?
Yeah, so I was really excited about that. So I don't feel necessarily as like behind of trying to like have to come up with a new Standard deck or something like that. A little bit worried about the results from Oklahoma City, since I primarily played Jund in Modern. It's kind of my deck that I really enjoy to play. And I mean, because you can kind of tune it for whatever you expect, but like the big mana decks, regardless of kind of what you do, aren't the greatest matchup. A lot of that kind of was running around at OKC, but in general, I'll figure something out. But yeah, I'm probably the most familiar with that, so kind of really know the ins and outs, what decks are playing, kind of how to attack them. So
cool.
Pretty excited that was the case.
And are you going to, what's your plan on playtesting and getting ready for the tournament? I love talking to people going to their first Pro Tour because they don't necessarily have a big old super team, that they're connected with. Maybe you do, maybe you have one in your back pocket and you're ready to go, but what's your plan for connecting and playing with others or preparing for the Pro Tour?
So as far as Modern goes, I know a lot of people in the Madison area that play as well, like friends and stuff that I think are also pretty good players, even though some of them might not necessarily have as much time to kind of get out and travel to Grand Prix and stuff. So just kind of between a lot of the people that I know, we have access to a lot of the decks in Modern. So kind of just jamming games with them, kind of talking about stuff there. Mm-hmm. kind of like figure that out. Because I think the biggest thing for me is just kind of you trying to figure out what the metagame is going to be at the Pro Tour, not necessarily learning the ins and outs of all the matchups as much, since I have been playing it pretty much since I started playing competitively. And then as far as kind of the drafting and stuff goes, I've never actually really played Magic Online before, but might consider getting into that so I can get a lot more drafts in, but then just trying to draft a lot more since I am part of a few just kind of just general Facebook chats that we kind of like, we'll do pickup drafts occasionally if we get people interested. And a lot of those really happen right when the set's released. So cool. Just trying to get as many drafts in as possible and talk to people kind of about what they've been seeing while drafting, and just using people that I know as a resource in general. Since I don't have one of those like big teams that are going to be like going to Spain and just being in the house for a week jamming Magic for that whole time. It's just going to be kind of taking advantage of what opportunities and what people I do have, and kind of pooling all their knowledge there and hoping it works out.
Love it. That's super cool. Good luck with that. We love cheering on our past guests and seeing them do well at future events. So, you know, carry it on, and hopefully we'll have you, you know, back on sometime next week. We're talking about some more successes. That'd be great. Just a quick reminder to the prodigies out there who want to connect with Sam. The best place to do that would be in the Facebook group. So go ahead and join the group if you haven't already, and we'll get him in there as well. You can do a post and tag him in it, and that's how you can ask a question or reach out, what have you. So, Sam, as we wrap things up, what is a parting piece of guidance you have? Either something you already said that you want to emphasize, or something new you want to leave with us here at the end?
I think just something that I kind of already mentioned was, especially kind of when you're getting into Magic and really trying to improve your skills, is to just not focus on the actual results or match, like your win-loss record. Just kind of focus on like the little improvements and stuff there, and kind of pull anything you can out from games, whether you win or lose. Like pretty much every game is a learning experience. And then kind of eventually the results will start to come around, but you're not necessarily going to see them all right away. So it is a long process, and eventually you'll get there. I mean, I know when I started, I pretty much lost most of my games, but now I'm finally, you know, doing better and stuff at things. So it is a process, but I mean, if I can do it, anyone can.
Love it. Sam, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. And thank you so much for your time and for sharing your stories and your thoughts and your experiences with us today. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
All right, thanks.
And there you have it, episode 267, all wrapped up. Sam, thank you so much for being a guest here on the show. Prodigies, you can get the show notes at mtgpro2.com/Sam Sakachewski. And I know that every time I say that name, it sounds different, but it's a tough one. But that is where you can find the show notes. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, get out there and play some Magic this weekend. It is pre-release weekend. Rivals of Ixalan is here. So I hope that you're able to go out and experience this new set, and then come and post about it in the Facebook group. Let us know what you got and what you like and what you learned and all those fun Magic things. So, and again, as we wrap things up, I want to say thank you to Paragon City Games for their support of the show, and to the patrons especially who make this show possible. Please, if you are a current patron, go into Patreon, update your account, make sure that your support level is where it needs to be, because when the transition happened from per episode to per month, it really reduced the amount of support that the show was getting and is making things a bit tough. So, and if you are not yet a patron, then please, by all means, go and check that out. That's something that's up your alley. If you feel like I've earned your support, and if you want to be considered in all the giveaways that we have moving forward, where we give away some sweet Magic product, as well as the other cool perks that I have there listed on the Patreon page, then go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon and find the support level that best suits. Well, thanks again for tuning in. Hope you're having a great time of year wherever you're at. I know that my family has been down for the count with the flu and a bad cough for the last 2 weeks or so. So hopefully you're doing better than that. But wherever you are, whatever you're doing, get out there and play some Magic. It's Friday, at least it is if you're listening to this live. So hopefully you get out to play some FNM. And if not, then maybe you get together with some friends and turn some cardboard sideways this weekend. Wouldn't that be a lot? Take care, all the best. Until next week, I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.